From the language app Babbel, this is Multilinguish. I'm senior producer Dylan Lyons. Deciding to learn a new language can be super exciting. Like with any good challenge, you get this thrill to be pursuing a goal that can open new doors. But before the thrill comes the decision. Which language should you learn? Well, that mostly depends on your motivation. Are you learning for love, for travel, or just to exercise your brain? Do you want to learn practical things you can use in your community? Or do you enjoy linguistic puzzles and learning for the sake of learning? All of these questions may play a role in your choice. But on today's episode, we're going to help you get started by breaking down the three easiest and hardest languages for English speakers to learn. There's obviously some subjectivity here, but I'll be joined by two of Babbel's language experts to explain why these languages made the top of the list. Before we dive in, please take a moment to make sure you're subscribed to Multilinguish so you get every episode in your feed. Okay, so I am joined now by my colleagues who have some linguistic expertise. Do you both want to introduce yourselves before we get started? Ted, why don't you start?
My name is Ted, and I'm an editor on the English team, and I've been working at Babbel for about 2.5 years now. And I think that I've already had a guest appearance talking about, what were we talking about?
Was that the Berlin expats or the American expats in Berlin episode?
Yeah, that's right. It was the expat episode. Yes. So it's good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Hi, I'm Ellen. I'm also in the didactics team. I'm a project manager for learning content and learning media. Thanks for having me.
Great. Yes, great. Well, thank you both for joining me. So you are going to take us through some of the, well, the three easiest languages for English speakers to learn, and then we will talk about the three hardest. But before we dive into the list, I know everyone's waiting with bated breath. Can we just go through a little bit of the methodology? Can you just tell me like what characteristics you consider when you decide like which are easier or harder languages for English speakers?
Sure. There are a few different things that we took into account when making this list. The first thing is how lexically similar the language you're learning is to your native language. And basically that just means how similar are the words of the language. So a language with high lexical similarity will have a lot of cognates, a lot of words that look similar to words in your language and have the same meaning.
Oh, we love cognates.
Yeah, and another thing is how grammatically similar it is, and also the syntax. So like the word order and how you form sentences, that can also be very informative in deciding if it's easy or not.
Mm-hmm. We also think about like the phonology of the language and how phonologically similar it is to your native language. So there are languages that have different sounds that do not happen in English. And if there are a lot of those sounds in the language that you're trying to learn, it might end up being a bit harder, right?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And then we also thought about opportunity to practice and the exposure that you're able to get. Obviously, English is one of the languages with the highest exposure, like it's all over the internet and all over film and TV and media. And it helps a lot if you're able to get a lot of exposure and also practice opportunities. So that's also something to think about.
Great.
And the last thing that we didn't really include in the list, because this is comes down to each person's individual background, is if you know any other languages, right? If you already know a Romance language like Spanish, then that would make picking up French or Italian a lot easier, because they languages that come from the same language family share a lot of characteristics.
Cool. So now that we've established how we came up with this list, let us wait no further. Let's dive in. Drumroll, please. What is the easiest language for English speakers to learn?
So the easiest language for English speakers to learn is Afrikaans.
Ooh.
And Afrikaans is it's the official language of both South Africa and Namibia. And it is a really close relative to Dutch. And Dutch is already really similar to English, but the reason Afrikaans is the easiest for English speakers to learn is because it's basically just a simplified version of Dutch. Okay. So let's take a look at Afrikaans and talk a little bit about what makes it easy. The first thing is that you don't have to learn a new alphabet, right? There are just a couple of letters that have these diacritic marks on them. So a little mark above the letter, like an E wearing a hat or something like that. And also English and Afrikaans, which are both Germanic languages, share a lot of words. So there's that lexical similarity that we were talking about. In fact, there are entire poems that could be read in either language. The words are all exactly the same and have the same meaning. They just have different pronunciation.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that similar. That's incredible.
Yeah, I found that pretty crazy as well. Also, something that's really nice about Afrikaans, a lot of Germanic languages have grammatical gender for their nouns, right? Maybe two or three, masculine, feminine, and sometimes neuter. But Afrikaans, just like English, only has one grammatical gender. So it makes it a lot easier to learn vocabulary, and by nature also simplifies the grammar. You don't need to remember gendered adjective endings or worry about how the words change depending on the case you're using.
That's actually a really helpful point, because I feel like one of the things that I've struggled with when learning languages is trying to figure out the genders, just because we're not used to it coming from English, and like figuring out, oh, what's the ending of this? And what if you don't know the gender of the person you're speaking to, or you're talking to a group? It just complicates things a lot. So I think that's really nice.
Yeah, exactly. And I mentioned cases before as well. And if you don't know what a case is, that's totally fine, because Afrikaans doesn't even have them. So nothing to worry about there.
Perfect.
Woohoo!
Afrikaans. It's also really easy in the grammar, because verb conjugation is super, super simple. Afrikaans doesn't change the verb depending on the subject, which is objectively easier even than how we do it in English. For example, in English, you know, we have the verb to be. So we have he is, I am, you are, and so on. But in Afrikaans, they do not change. For example, for any personal pronoun, whatever subject you're talking about, their verb to be is just es, right?
Oh,
so it's
wow.
Like in English, if you could just say I is, you is, he is, she is, we is. It's really easy.
Wow. Right? So like, is that for all their verbs? You just don't have to conjugate?
Yes, that is for all verbs. No conjugations. Really great, huh?
All right, sign me up. I'm ready to learn Afrikaans.
Right. So there are no conjugations in the sense of subject-verb agreement, but there are sometimes you'll need to conjugate a verb, and that's when using a different tense, right? So in English, we have 12 different tenses. Past, future, present perfect continuous, all these. And in Afrikaans, you only have three tenses. You have past, present, and future. And another great thing here is that the present form of each verb is also the infinitive, so the base form, as well as the imperative form, the command form that you use to tell someone to do something. So you have the present form is those three together. And then to form the future, you just use a helping verb. And in this case, it's zal, and just like will in English. And there you use zal with the present form of the verb. So really, you only need to learn two verb forms. You need to learn the present form and the past form. And then you know all the forms of a verb.
Amazing. I love that. That's a breeze. So let me ask you, other than the fact that it is very easy or relatively easy to learn for English speakers, what's a good motivation? Why would people want to learn Afrikaans, would you say?
Well, it's the official language of South Africa and Namibia, like I said. So if you're interested in traveling to this part of the world, then that's great. It's not the biggest language in the world. It's only got about 10 million native speakers. But there's a lot of Afrikaans media and learning materials that you can practice with. Also, South Africans love to travel. You'll probably run into them wherever you go in the world. So you'd have a great opportunity to practice the language there as well.
So is there anything tricky about the language?
As with learning any language, there's going to be some tricky bits. And while Afrikaans is a phonetic language, which means that the words sound how they're spelled, not like English, right? Once you understand the sounds of the language, this makes it really easy to learn new words. But the tricky part is learning how each letter or combination of letters sounds. Some pronunciations are completely different than you would think coming from English. For example, the letter combination TJ can sound like ch or k. And neither of those is what I would have thought looking at T and J, right?
Interesting.
So I'd say that's probably the tricky part, is getting the phonetic system of the language down.
Got it. Okay. Well, overall, it sounds like not too much of a challenge. And a great possible choice for English speakers to take up. So thank you for that. So now let's move on to the second easiest language for English speakers to learn, which I believe is a Thai, is it not?
It is. So this is a tie between Norwegian and Swedish. And I'm a little bit biased here, so I'll talk mostly about Swedish because that's also my language.
Right.
But this is very scientific, so it's not just me thinking that you all should learn Swedish.
But you kind of secretly do want us all to learn Swedish.
I secretly do, yeah. Yes.
Right. Okay.
Just like with Afrikaans, Norwegian and Swedish are closely related to English with a lot of cognates. Often you can sort of guess a word if you have some imagination with the vowels, like you swap out the vowel or you spell it a little bit differently. It's not that close, so you can write a poem and read it in any language, but it's there are definitely a whole bunch of words that are pretty easy to figure out. And also, just like with Afrikaans, actually, there's no verb conjugation.
So another one.
You
I
would
love this.
Say another one, yeah. And this goes for both Norwegian and Swedish and Danish. So all of these Scandinavian or Nordic languages. So that makes it easy to learn, and it makes it really easy to get started also, because a lot of times you spend so much time trying to figure out how to conjugate a verb when you first learn a language. But with the Scandinavian languages, you can pretty much learn the 20 most common verbs, and that can already take you pretty far because you can just use the same form for everyone. And then there are tenses, of course, and they change, but they roughly match English, I would say. There's no progressive form or like gerund, so there's no the ing form in English. So you would say, right now I eat, not right now I am eating.
That makes
but
it simpler.
But that actually makes it easy. Yeah, it makes it simpler. Yeah, so I would say that those are pretty good contestants, actually, to be, and they belong on the top three, I would say.
Okay, now you mentioned Danish, but why is Danish not in there?
Well, I didn't want to put Danish on this list, and believe me, I love Danish. It's one of my absolute favorite languages. But it is very tricky to pronounce. It is completely unphonetic, like nothing is spelled as it is said. And they also use a very strange and unusual way of counting, which is by 20s, and then
what
you divide it by half. Yeah.
Oh, it's like no. French. You have to do math?
It's like
French
yeah.
is wild,
oh,
too.
No.
Mm-hmm. No, I
yeah,
can't
either
do
you
that.
Do math, but I think what most people end up doing is that they rather learn everything by heart. But in the other two languages in the counting system, there is more, logic, if you will, or it's easier to apply rules.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, But I mean, they are very similar, the Scandinavian languages. And at least in writing, you are able to understand most of the other ones when you know one.
Uh-huh. Very economical.
Yeah, totally.
Great.
And I want to ask about, so it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that most people in the Scandinavian countries also speak English. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. The Nordic countries, so also including Finland, is constantly on the like top five of countries in the world where English proficiency is the highest. So yeah, that it's like nobody maybe has to learn a Scandinavian language, but as we know, motivations are different for people, and there are a lot of motivations to learn a language even if they speak good English. Like perhaps you really want to move there and then it's helpful, or you want to get to know someone just a little bit better, or you have a partner who speaks the language and you want to become, you want to get like closer to them. That's also a common motivation.
Mm-hmm. And they also just, they sound nice, right? They have that sing-songy quality.
Yeah, that's true. They do, but that can also be a little bit difficult to get that right.
True.
Because sometimes the prosody is also important, because it carries a lot of meaning. The intonation sort of has some meaning built into it. For example, if you go up in the end of a sentence, you signal politeness very often, which in other languages, that's the way you ask a question, right? So that's very confusing to Swedes learning Spanish, that they just end up asking a lot of questions when all they wanted to do was to be polite.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's almost tonal, but not quite? Or would it be considered tonal?
Some people consider Swedish and Norwegian tonal. They have pitch accent. So there are certain words that have different meanings depending on the pitch accent. Like tomten, tomten, anden, anden.
Oh, wow.
Those are really different.
Hear a difference, words. So that would be difficult.
So that can be tricky. So we're actually already talking about things that can be tricky, and pronunciation is definitely one of them. So the intonation, the tonality, the vowel sounds that are a lot more vowel sounds than in English, which contributes, I suppose, to this sing-song quality. And you also have a lot of reductions or contractions, which is like words blending together. If you would say the sentence, jag är inte här, I'm not here, if you would say that how we actually say it, we say jag inte är.
Oh, wow. So you really,
it can be very difficult to parse. Exactly. So it can be difficult if you listen to that, to actually parse the words together and like where does one word stop and the other one start. And right. Grammar wise, Swedish and Norwegian do have gendered nouns, but not in the classic way. So Swedish, for example, has two genders, but they're not masculine or feminine, so they don't like correspond to human gender, if you will. So that can be tricky to learn.
So can you talk a little bit more about that? What are they called?
They're called common and neuter. So neuter is the neuter, like you have in German. For example, in German you have feminine, masculine, and neuter. But something happened around 1,000 years ago in Scandinavia that the feminine and masculine just merged together, and they form a big group of nouns. It's like 75%.
So you can kind of just take a shot in the dark, and
yes, most of the time,
three quarters of the time, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, most of the time, okay, it's going to be a common gender.
Okay.
decent odds.
Yeah, so no. So, I mean, it's not, yeah, it's not a complete deal breaker, I wouldn't say.
Okay, great.
All right.
Great. So Swedish and Norwegian are both strong candidates. If you're looking for an easier language. Awesome. So lastly, to round out our list of the easiest languages, we have Spanish.
Yep, that's right, Spanish. so I guess first we'll talk a little bit about why it's easy. It's easy because it's a Romance language, which means, of course, that it's based on Latin. And if you speak English, you know a lot of Latin-based words because a lot of our words are also based on Latin. So again,
right.
This means lots of cognates, right? Lots of words that sound similar have the same meaning. So that, again, makes memorizing vocabulary a lot easier. The pronunciation is also pretty straightforward. It's a phonetic language. There are, of course, some sounds that don't occur in English. For example, like the trilled R, which I can't do for the life of me. It's really
hard. It's a tricky one.
But of course, with anything, practice makes perfect. I'm sure if you practiced over and over again, you could do it.
Yeah, it is like, in general, Spanish is, it just feels like so much easier to pronounce than even English words. Even for an English speaker, I would say it's just very straightforward. It's pronounced generally the way that it's spelled, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, talk about an accessible language, especially if you're living in the States. There are 45 million native Spanish speakers in the US alone.
Wow.
That's more than in Spain. Like,
so your practice buddies are right there.
Right, exactly. And, you know, the country bordering to the south, Mexico, has the most Spanish speakers of any country in the world. So you're not far away if you want to go take a little trip and practice, you know?
Yeah.
And also, it's an official language in about 20 other countries. So there are lots of places you can go, travel, practice, meet people. So that's another big reason why it's easy.
It definitely feels very widespread. Like, yeah, you can go anywhere and probably find a Spanish speaker.
For sure.
The other thing that's interesting is how much it appears like in pop culture and in the media. I think we just naturally get exposed to quite a bit of Spanish, whether it's, there's a few Netflix shows that I happen to love that are in Spanish, or just bits and pieces of Spanish appearing in the news or in place names. So I feel like we definitely get a lot of exposure.
Yeah, exactly. And I've also noticed recently there's been a big trend when there's just some little random snippet of Spanish in a TV show or in a movie. A lot of times now they don't even put subtitles anymore. Right. So it's almost like for those people who do speak Spanish, a little Easter egg. You know, you can be like, oh, I know what he just said. So
that's true.
Another reason to learn, right? The lack of subtitled Spanish. All right. So I guess we should talk a little bit about what makes it tricky. Yeah.
Yes.
There are some tricky grammar rules and tenses. Spanish has a lot of tenses, just like English. They do mostly line up with our English ones, so it's not too hard to learn. But, you know, in comparison with Afrikaans and Swedish, you know, it's definitely a bit trickier. So because Spanish is such a widely spoken language, you're definitely going to come across situations where there are different ways to say something depending where you are. For example, the Y sounds that you'll hear a lot in Spanish. For example, in the word yo, I, or the one that's made by the two L's, right? And like the word ella, the word for she. In some places, for example, in Argentina, it sounds a bit like sh or zh. So you wouldn't say yo, you'd say sho. And you wouldn't say ella, you'd say asia. So you're going to find that with a language that's spoken over half the world, that in some places it's diverged a bit, and there's different rules, different slang, different words that are used, different pronunciations. So that can make it a bit tricky as well. But in general, if you travel to Argentina and you're speaking standard Mexican Spanish, they'll understand you.
Right. And Aylin, you've learned some Spanish, although I guess your native language isn't English, so it's a little different. But how have you found it in terms of difficulty?
No, I definitely agree with all of this. Super, you know, it's great that it's so phonetic, but I do have a hard time with the verbs. There are, especially coming from a language where you don't conjugate anything and learning Spanish, that is tricky because you have to, like, your head just spins in other directions and you need to constantly think about who am I talking about.
Yeah, that's true.
That's hard. And then the conjugations on top of all the tenses and modes and aspects and all that. The verbs are really what gets me with Spanish.
Yeah. And you also have the grammatical gender to some extent there as well.
Yeah, you do. But it's easier because it's so much easier to see from the form of the verb or the noun if it's feminine or masculine.
True, it's generally like an O or an A, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good thing about it, that it's very regular in that sense.
Cool. Yeah, I think no one will be terribly surprised that Spanish made the list. One other thing that we should talk about is the rate of speaking. Ted, do you mm-hmm. want to explain that a bit?
Yeah, so... As with a lot of other Romance languages, Spanish speakers, they speak quite fast. They speak at about, I found a study where they figured out how many syllables per second, on average, a speaker of a certain language speaks. And for Spanish, it's the second fastest language, only followed... the only faster language is Japanese, and they speak 7.82 syllables a second. It can make parsing individual words quite difficult for our slow English ears. On average in English, we speak 6.2 syllables per second. So
interesting. So that almost two extra syllables makes a big difference.
Exactly. And if you've ever heard anyone, a native speaker, speaking Spanish, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's super fast.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, I think Spanish is a great one. I think a lot of people choose to learn Spanish. I know that for Babbel in the US, it's by far the most learned language. Yeah. And it makes sense because there's so much exposure and there's so many uses for it. But also it's not as difficult as some. So happy it made the top three. So thank you both for that. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, if anyone is up for a challenge, we'll talk about the three hardest languages for English speakers. So stick around.
Hello, it's Thomas from the podcast. Multilanguage is brought to you by Babbel, the language app. Our marketing team wants you to know that we offer an app that teaches you 14 languages. From Spanish, French, and Italian to Portuguese, Russian, and more, Babbel's app is created by real language teachers and experts. You'll learn how to have conversations in real-life situations, whether you need to get a restaurant reservation in Russia or eat your way out of a witch's gingerbread house in Germany. We're offering multilingual listeners 50% off a 3-month subscription. New customers can get this offer by visiting babbel.com/podcast. That's babbel.com/podcast.
Welcome back. So before the break, we talked about the three easiest languages for English speakers to learn. And now we're going to go to the flip side and talk about the hardest languages for English speakers to learn. So this is good for those of you who are up for a challenge. And we will also talk a bit about why each language is worth learning, even though it's harder. So don't give up hope or write off these languages for sure. But let us start with the hardest language. Ted, what is that?
That is Mandarin Chinese. And just a slight disclaimer here, we chose Mandarin Chinese, but you could easily choose Cantonese or another dialect as well. We chose Mandarin because it's the most widely spoken dialect of Chinese. And
makes sense.
It is hard for a lot of different reasons. The first being that it has a completely different alphabet with thousands of special characters. And if you want to be literate in Chinese, you have to learn them all.
Oh, and boy.
For us English speakers with our measly little 26 letters, that's a huge task. So, yeah, luckily there is a romanized version of the alphabet called Pinyin that is pretty widely used, but you're still going to need to learn the characters as well. Also, it's a tonal language. So there are four different tones. I think there's high, low, rising, and falling. And depending on the tone that you use, it can completely change the meaning of a word. There are tons of really subtle homophones in Chinese. So for example, the word ma is, and maybe my tone is way off, but is mother, and ma is horse. So, right.
You can that could end some, badly for you.
Some embarrassing situations that could result from that. Yeah. So there's the tones. And also, Chinese speakers use a lot of idioms. And they don't directly translate. So, for example, we have the idiom translated literally is to cast a brick to attract jade. Any idea what that means?
No.
But it's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, it's really nice. But if you heard that and you're like, okay, I know all those words, what does that mean? It means that you're just throwing an idea out there. And maybe that idea is, you know, not very good, but it will lead to a better idea.
Mm. Oh, interesting. Nice. So you'll get some jade by the end.
Right, exactly. And another one that I found that I liked was 9 cows and 1 strand of hair. And it is basically the equivalent of a drop in the bucket, right? Something insignificant, really tiny.
Wow.
Yeah.
9 cows is pretty big.
Right.
It's a lot of cows.
But of course, just because it's hard doesn't mean that it's not worth it, right?
Right.
There are a lot of reasons to learn Chinese. The first being that it is one of the most widely spoken languages in the world. It has the most native speakers of any language. It has 1.3 billion native speakers. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So you'll find someone to talk to if you speak Chinese, that's for sure. Also, it's good for your brain. There are studies that suggest that learning Chinese uses more parts of your brain than other languages. So it's a really great way to keep mentally fit as well.
Oh, wow. That's super interesting. I've never heard that. But I guess you have to like memorize so many characters and use so many different tones and all that. I guess it makes sense, but that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Work that brain.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Chinese sounds like a good bet. I know it's also pretty big in the business world. And so a lot of people choose to learn it. If they're going into like global business as well. So awesome. All right. Next up, second hardest language for English speakers.
Yeah. What do we got? So yes, we have a little bit of a wild card here, I would say. We have put Hungarian on this list.
Ooh.
And you know, you might think that so many European languages are making it to the easiest languages list, so why not Hungarian? But in fact, Hungarian is not at all related to any of the other European languages, except for Finnish, Estonian, and Sami. Mm-hmm. It's a completely different language family, and it works in a completely different way than other languages in Europe. So one interesting thing about it is that it's agglutinative, which means that you just, well, I like to think of it, you glue parts together to form one giant monster word.
Right.
So prefixes and suffixes are added to a word, or like a base, instead of stuff like prepositions or even pronouns. So one word carries a lot of information.
So they must get pretty long.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I saw a word, it was like 50 some letters long.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And it's a word that's not used in everyday conversation, and it's more an example for Hungarian speakers to show like that their language can be overly complex sometimes. But it's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, and another complex thing about Hungarian is there are 26 cases.
Wait.
So Ted, you touched on cases before. I mean, the 4 or 5 that German has, it seems like child's play in comparison to 26 of 26. Hungarian.
It's insane.
Yeah,
I
can't even
take that in high school.
Yeah, exactly. I can't even, like, I don't have fantasy enough to you know, imagine. I don't have imagination enough to imagine what they can even be and what you use them
right.
for.
Beyond our wildest dreams.
Yeah, and then a little bit on the phonetic side of things, they also use, or Hungarian has vowel harmony. So words are supposed to harmonize vowel wise, you can say. You add an extra word onto an extra vowel onto a word to make it sound right, and you have to remember rules in order to like do this right.
That sounds hard, but it also sounds really beautiful, really
exactly.
pretty.
Exactly. I appreciate that someone cares about harmony.
Right.
For sure.
Right. Exactly.
And but you know, there are people who learn Hungarian, so why would they do that? And I mean, I think that it's there's a lot of wordplay going into this, right? You know, you can, it's like solving a puzzle. And if you're into that, and if you're into like maths, all of these cases are just interesting, I believe, to a lot of people.
It's like a linguistic nerd's dream.
Exactly.
Language.
Exactly. And the vowel harmony and the whole agglutination things gives it like a nice flow and melody. Well, there are actually only 3 tenses also, past, present, and future. So while you have 26 cases, you have an easier time when you come to the, like the verb verb phrases.
Okay.
And then I don't know if you want to explore and experience Hungarian culture, which is an old and rich culture of Europe. Then you can do so by learning the language, and it will be easier.
That is true.
But yeah, still difficult. Still definitely among the difficult languages.
Cool. So last but not least, the third hardest language for English speakers.
The third hardest language is Navajo, which is also called Diné in Navajo. And there are, again, several reasons why it's hard. First of all, being that it's tonal, like Mandarin. It also has consonants that are not present in English, like dl, dz,
r. Oh, wow.
And my favorite one, a K with a glottal stop, it just sounds like.
Oh, that's cool, actually. That's
yeah.
Really
cool.
Yeah, it's really cool, but wrapping your head around these and making these sounds in the middle of a word that you already are unfamiliar with, not so easy.
Right.
For sure.
That's tough.
And like Hungarian, it also has elements of agglutination. So this like gluing parts onto words to make a different meaning, but it's so unpredictable that some linguists don't even consider it to be agglutinative.
Oh, God.
So I don't even know what that means. And it's already sounding really intimidating.
Right. So,
yeah. It also has almost no loan words from other languages. So all the words in Navajo are just in Navajo. So good luck learning the vocab.
Right. And I think we take that for granted because we have so many loan words in English right. from other languages.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And also, interestingly, because of the lack of loan words and the difficult grammar, maybe you know this, during World War II, the Allies employed Navajo code talkers to send encoded messages. And so they would basically speak in some kind of code using Navajo words. And it was the only spoken code that was never deciphered in World War II.
Yeah, I think that story is so fascinating. And we actually have an article about the Navajo code talkers. So if you're interested, I'll put the link in the show notes. But shameless promotion there. But yeah, I mean, that just tells you how difficult it is off the bat, because if they chose it as like their indecipherable code.
Right, exactly. So, and the last thing, we talked about this opportunity for practice, exposure thing. And with Navajo, it is the most widely spoken Native American language, it still only has about 170,000 speakers. So there's not a lot of opportunity to practice. And it's pretty geographically isolated to the southwest of the United States. So,
right. Okay.
Yeah.
So if you live in like in Arizona, New Mexico,
right,
then you're more likely to encounter it.
Exactly.
Okay. So let's look at the other side. Why is it worth learning anyway?
Well, by learning Navajo, you would contribute to the preservation of a minority language and culture. There, like I said, there aren't a lot of speakers. And so every extra speaker that this language could get, I think, is a good thing, right?
Absolutely.
It's also wildly different from most other languages people commonly learn. So it might be kind of fun and unique challenge and, you know, a little feather in your cap to say like, oh yeah, I know a little bit of Navajo.
Yeah.
And I would say the last thing, and this is true of all of the languages that we've talked about today, not just Navajo, it offers unique angles for looking at the world. You know, the more languages you know, the more ways to talk about the same thing, the wider your horizons are, you know, your worldview, mm-hmm. And the more enriched your experience of the world. So it's not a bad reason.
Totally agree. And I do want to close with just a caveat of sorts, which is that everyone's different and we all find different things challenging. And also, just because something is challenging doesn't mean it's not worth doing, which I think is important to drive home. All of these languages are incredible in their own ways and offer a lot of really cool opportunities if you decide to learn them.
Yeah, for sure. And also, if you're motivated to learn Hungarian, that will be easier for you than if you have absolutely no motivation to learn Spanish, I believe.
Right. So I would agree with that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. All right. Well, thank you both for coming on today and for talking to us about the easiest and hardest languages.
Thanks
for having us, Dylan. It was great to be on.
Thank you so much. And I'll talk to you later.
All right. Yes. Bye.
Bye.
Multilingual is a production of the language app Babbel. This episode was produced by me, Dylan Lyons, and edited by Brian Rosado. Special thanks to Aylin Askloff and Ted Mentley for sharing their expertise. You can read about today's episode topic and more on Babbel Magazine. Just visit babbel.com/magazine. Say hi on social media by finding us at Babbel USA. Finally, please rate and review this podcast. Thanks for listening.